Our first case is VR Optics versus Peloton Interactive, 2021-1900. And we should say in advance, the panel is a bit doubtful whether the asserted cross-appeal by Peloton is genuinely a cross-appeal, but we, in the interest of being totally fair and not having anyone feel they were deprived of argument time, we'll let you have your 2 minutes for rebuttal on the cross-appeal, if that's what you wish. Mr. Gannon.
May it please the court? The Markman in this case was hotly contested. The plaintiff, VRO, got the construction it asked for verbatim. Everybody at the Markman hearing understood that the plaintiff's construction required more than just the display of individual performance parameters. That was the issue at the Markman. Is the claim, is it broad enough to read on just showing performance parameters, or do you have to do something more? Do you have to have a comparison? Do you have to compare the performance parameters, calculate a difference, and then display that difference on the screen? In other words, provide a ranking. That's what was argued at Markman, and the district court judge adopted the plaintiff's construction verbatim.
Is this the construction that says display a difference in performance between the fitness equipment and at least one remote fitness equipment? That's what you're referring to, right?
Correct. It's to display a difference in performance between the fitness equipment and at least one remote fitness equipment, based on the difference between the first and second parameters. That was the stated construction, and it was all discussed very clearly at the Markman, I believe.
But your view is that that language requires that there be no mental effort on the part of the user when looking at the display of the difference, and if it's, for example, just numbers, that would not satisfy that claim construction.
Yes, if the user has to, in their own mind, figure out the ranking, then the system hasn't done a comparison.
So between if I see 60, one biker's at 60, that would be very fast, but let's just say they are 60 miles per hour and the other one's at 40, because that takes mental effort on my part to do 60, 40 is less than 60, it's not actually satisfying the visual display of a difference.
That's right, because there's no comparison of those performance parameters to determine a difference, and then visually displaying that difference. So in other words, if you only understand that somebody's riding at 8.5 miles an hour and someone else is riding at 3 miles an hour, you don't know who's winning that race. That's just a instantaneous performance parameter.
Does your specification make that clear?
The specification does make it clear. And actually, Your Honor, let me start with the claim, because I think the claim itself is clear. The claim says logic configured to drive the display, this is claim one, in response to both the first and second performance parameters, such that a performance comparison is displayed. So the claim itself is contemplating there's a difference between the performance comparison and the first and second performance parameters. In other words, you're displaying the performance comparison in response to those first and second parameters. So to answer your question, yes, column 11, this is appendix 124. The specification is very clear. It talks about this racing track in figure 2. And the specification talks about figure 2 with a racing track with dots.
The dots, in your view, do show the relative comparison because they're dots. There's no mental. There looks like there's mental effort on my part to figure out which of those dots is winning.
So all those dots are showing. Each of those dots are reflecting the individual performance parameter of each rider.
So are the numbers 60 and 40.
The 60 and 40?
Well, I just was making up from the hypothetical I gave you earlier where I said one bike rider is going 60 and one bike rider is going 40.
Right.
But here, there's also some mental effort for me to see which dot is in advance of the other dot.
That's right, Your Honor. So with respect to this track, Each one of the dots is only reflecting the individual parameters of each bike, and it's putting it on the screen. So in this particular display, where you only have dots on a circle, you're not comparing, you're not calculating a difference or comparing that parameter, determining a performance comparison, and then displaying that. So if you look at the specification at column 11, it's very clear. It says reference is now made to figure 2, which shows the elliptical running track with the dots. And it may be provided to illustrate respective competitors. Now, those dots are reflecting individual performance parameters. Then the specification says additional textual information 208 and 210 may be provided to give more detailed data on the individual competitors. So if you look at figure 2, the information about the individual competitors, you can see in figure 2, for example, on the top right, there's the instantaneous speed, 8.2. It's lap 2, and that competitor's gone 0.31 miles.
What is the information here in figure 2 that doesn't require any mental effort on my part to figure out the difference between the two?
Well, the difference between the two, when the patent says, and their comparative performance information, the only information on figure 2 that shows the comparative performance information is the lead by 0.01 and the lead by 0.6. There you don't have to do any, there's no offloading to the user. The computer has determined the difference between the performance parameters. It's determined that difference, and it's actually displayed in figure 2 when it tells you, okay, rider 2 is leading by 0.01 miles. That is a ranking, and that's what the claim was limited to with the term. The term in the claim is performance comparison. Let me just get to the claim. Performance comparison. And in the specification at column 11, it's telling you that the performance, the comparative performance information is different than the raw parameters, the raw data. So with respect to figure 2, the only information that's where you're displaying a difference in performance is when it's telling you, hey, I'm leading by 0.01 miles, or I'm leading by 0.6 seconds. So what happened here? The district court, even though it gave the plaintiff VRO its construction, when we got to summary judgment, the district court failed to apply the construction that it gave us, that was argued and that was given to us at the Markman. The Watterson reference at best only shows individual performance parameters, not the other requirements of the claim. And so the district court made a couple errors. One is the district court didn't apply the construction that was given. And number two, the district court improperly resolved issues of fact on summary judgment. So what were the issues of fact on summary judgment? And let me just make sure this is very clear. VRO's expert, Mr. Lenz, testified, and he put in evidence on summary judgment, that an elliptical track that only shows individual competitor data performance parameters does not meet the claim language. So that was VRO's expert put in evidence saying, hey, if you're putting in just the raw speed, that's not a performance comparison. And he said there's no disclosure of a comparison of the parameters to determine a difference in performance, nor is there a display of that difference in performance. And that's at Appendix 9196 to 97.
This is the part where the district court said that was a cramped reading of his claim construction, right?
That's right. This is where the district court veered off course, we believe, and didn't follow the construction that was given.
What if I think that that's a reasonable reading of the claim construction language, even though it was your proposed language and you meant it in a different way?
Well, I think at the very least, Your Honor, there would still be an issue of fact. Because the claim says you're displaying a performance comparison in response to parameters. And that there's testimony in the record that's not met by Watterson. And that testimony was given by VRO's expert, Mr. Lenz. Peloton's expert, interestingly, agreed with Mr. Lenz. But in any event, it's an issue of fact for the jury. But let me go on to pointing out what Peloton's own expert said in this case. Peloton's expert agreed that merely displaying performance parameters, like in Watterson, does not meet the claim element. So this is what Peloton's own expert said. Now, this was in his infringement report, but nonetheless, he was talking about the construction that was given to VRO, the plaintiff, at Markman. And I think this is really the crux here. He said, presenting the raw output data, performance parameters, in the absence of any display based on the difference between the first and second performance parameters does not satisfy this claim element. That's at Appendix 9309. He also said, offloading the comparison of performance parameters to a human does not satisfy the plain and ordinary meaning of the claim language. That's at Appendix 9309.
Counsel, when I look at Figure 2, and I look at, listen to your argument regarding the difference in performance parameters, Watterson, you claim, compels you to make a mental comparison. And I'm not persuaded that even if it does that, that you don't have a difference in performance parameters, that's not displayed. It seems to me that you're bringing into the claim a function that's not in the claim. And that's an algorithm of some sort that takes you beyond just simply displaying the differences in performance parameters.
So, Your Honor, the construction...
Back to your race analogy, yeah. You not only want there to be a display as to the time that each runner ran the race, and maybe even a display that shows one runner ahead of another. You want to see you want to see them up on the podium.
Right. You want to see the ranking, and that's because.
But that's where does the claim take us there?
So the claim. Okay. So here's where the claim takes us there. The claim says a performance comparison. First of all, the court's construction says that the visual display of the performance has to be based on a difference between the performance parameters. There has to be a difference between the parameters, and then you display
it. Doesn't it say you have to display the difference?
You have to display the difference based on the difference between the first and second parameters.
And your view is that that's... you can answer Judge Reina's questions,
so,
but I understand I have the same trouble that Judge Reina does, that I have a hard time understanding that when you display 60 and 40, that's not displaying the difference in and of itself.
And it comes from, again, from the specification, column 11, where it talks about...
What line are you looking at?
Pardon me?
Column 11, line?
Sure, yep. Column 11, line 34. That's the key, Your Honor. It talks about individual competitor data, which is the performance parameters, and then it says at line 34, and their comparative performance information. The only information in Figure 2 that's comparative performance information is showing the difference, who's winning the race.
Doesn't it, if you display more than one person's data, why would that not inherently include displaying their comparative performance information?
I'm sorry, could you say that again, Judge?
If you're displaying more than one person's data, why would you not be also inherently displaying their competitive performance information?
Because you're not, because the claim and the specification are clear that you're taking the performance parameters and you're calculating a difference between the two. Just putting up raw information from each competitor doesn't meet the claim.
Where does it say that?
It says it right in column 11. Column 11.
Yeah, well, it says you give data on the individual competitors and their comparative performance information. You might be reading a little bit into that and saying, well, what that means is the comparative performance information has to be something. It can't be just their data, and I look at it and I see a difference. But I'm afraid, is there something else besides that one sentence that you're relying on?
Sure. Look at figure 10 of the patent. Sorry, let me get the right. Figure 6. Figure 6 of the patent, a box 330 says logic to compare local and remote performance parameters. It's right in figure 6. It's box 330. That's what the patent is talking about. And it's clear from the claim. You're displaying a performance comparison in response to the raw data. It's in response to the raw data. So this box 330 is the logic to compare the local and remote parameters. So you're comparing those parameters, and then you're calculating a difference in performance and then displaying that. And again, I think even under, which regardless of what the district court judge, again, the point here is our expert put in evidence that Watterson doesn't meet the claim. Peloton's own expert said if you have to offload, if you have to calculate in your own head, it doesn't meet the claim. That's the record.
Let's hear from Mr. Berman. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Berman, you've just allocated a short amount of time for yourself, so let me get right to the issue, the duty to defend. Contracted to build a frame for Peloton, and you delivered, and the contract's over, and then you bought a patent and sued them under it, and you said, you argued that the duty to defend doesn't apply because the contract is over. This sounds like the boy who shot his parents and asked for mercy from the court on the grounds that he's an orphan.
So, Your Honor, I understand where Your Honor's question is coming from. So that's one of the arguments we make. But even before then, our argument is that the district court's application and interpretation of the party's contract to impose on Valencia Design Group a broader duty to defend than its own design work is divorced from the actual language of the contracts as a whole.
I want to ask you about a statement you have in your brief on page 25. Oops. You state without any case law or any legal support that the duty to defend or that the duty to defend is not a representation or warranty under section 8.3b. What is your basis for saying that? Because it doesn't seem correct to me.
So the duty to defend is in...
Hey, why isn't it a representation? What is your view of what a representation or warranty is that you could say that?
So the representations and warranties are listed in the contract itself. The duty to defend and duty to indemnify.
It is in the contract itself.
Well, there is a provision of the contract that's an indemnification provision, which also references the duty to defend. There's separate sections of the contract are representations and warranties. So it is. I don't believe it was a necessary legal statement we were making that required a citation to case law. It's simply accurate to state that the way the contract is structured, there are representations and warranties, and then there's some indemnification obligation and duty to defend.
So you think you define those words, representation and warranties, to have a special meaning?
I think that's accurate, that they do have, well, there's special, I mean, they are what they are. They're representations and warranties. It's not a duty to defend is not a representation and warranty. It's an obligation imposed. Well, first of all, it's not.
Representation and warranty is pretty broad. I represent, I will defend you if you're sued for infringement.
But in the section of the contract.
Just because it doesn't say I represent doesn't mean it's not a representation or a warranty.
Well, here's what I would say about that. There's a section of the contract referred to as representations and warranties. Each party makes specific representations and warranties. These contracts aren't unique in that respect. And I think, just as a matter of contract interpretation, to encompass every obligation in a contract as a representation and warranty, I don't believe that's the way contracts are interpreted. Not everything is a representation and a warranty. I'm not saying it's not a legal obligation. It is a legal obligation, and the district court interpreted the scope of that obligation to the duty to defend. But that
Where
doesn't.
Is the section that says representation and warranties?
I want to make sure I'm looking at the same contract as Your Honor is looking at. So they're the two contracts. Both have sections. So I'll refer to both. So in the 2012 contract...
I'm just more interested in 2014 right now.
Okay. So in the 2014 contract, I didn't highlight it.
Counsel, there is also a survival provision here that extends beyond the termination of the contract because it calls for performance after termination of the contract, and an infringement claim can be made after the termination of the contract, and so necessarily the duty to defend survives the termination of the contract.
So, Your Honor, it's Section 8.2, Your Honor, I apologize. And I hear, Your Honor, you're going back to the original question, which is, does the duty to defend extend beyond the term of the contract? And we've presented arguments that if reading the contract as a whole, there are provisions which reference obligations that survive and don't survive. And I can hear the skepticism in Your Honor's question that Your Honor believes that obligation necessarily survives. Even if that were the case, one still has to interpret the contract to encompass a duty to defend that goes beyond Valenci Design Group's own design work. And the primary argument we're making is that is not a fair interpretation or application of the contract as a whole if one considers the relationship of the parties. The clearest evidence of that is Peloton's own behavior. There is other intellectual property litigation surrounding the Peloton's bike system, and they did not submit any of those litigations to Valenci Design Group to defend, and that's because even they understood that this contract didn't encompass the duty to defend anything other than Valenci Design Group's own work.
Counsel, you allocated the majority of your time to your partner here.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give you a minute for rebuttal later. Mr. Schlotkin, did I pronounce your name accurately?
Yes, Your Honor, you did. Thank you. It's tall, short, gin-like alcohol.
Short gin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
These days, genealogy is very popular.
Thank you, Your Honor, for that. I appreciate that. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Steve Shortchin from the firm Shepherd Mullen on behalf of the appellee and cross appellant Peloton Interactive. Your Honors, I'd like to dive right into some of the questions Judge Stoll and Judge Reyna asked counsel for VR Optics, if that's appropriate from the Court's perspective, because I think those questions laser-focused on the issue before the panel and result in affirming the District Court's decision. One matter that hasn't been addressed so far, Your Honors, is the question of waiver. As counsel for VR Optics stated during their prepared statements, in this case, Judge Etkin in the District Court adopted verbatim the claim construction proposed by VR Optic for the single limitation at issue in this appeal. Now on appeal, having lost on summary judgment and had their expert excluded, they seek this court, or they request this court, to adopt a new construction that adds a significant limitation to the claim construction, which Judge Stoll questioned about.
Well, part of the argument for the new claim construction is that your expert changed the opinion.
Your Honor, with all due respect to opposing counsel, that is not a fair characterization of what Mr. Rawls did on behalf of Peloton. What Mr. Rawls did, and the court will find that Appendix 9309 and the associated two pages cited after that by VR Optics, he was discussing what was called a scorecard. And in some of the Peloton devices, for example, the accused Peloton treadmill, there can be a scorecard that demonstrates just your specific performance metrics.
I want to hear what you're saying, but can you answer the question whether your expert agreed with the claim construction that VR was seeking clarification on?
Our expert followed the court's construction. Our expert absolutely disagreed, and our brief points out where, as does Appendix 10,277 through 78, that our expert did not believe that the claims required, as they now seek, no mental comparison by the user is required, Judge Reyna. And so the section that is cited by VRO in their brief, in that section of our expert's report, he is discussing a limited application of the Peloton treadmill in which, for example, hypothetically, Judge Reyna, your individual performance parameter is displayed and just that information. And what our expert actually said in his report, and the court may find this at Appendix 9309, presenting the raw output data, this is the important part, in the absence of any display on the difference between the second and first performance parameters does not satisfy the claim limitation or the claim element, he said. He then said, alternatively, a graphical representation could be presented to each user, and those are the elliptical dots around a track.
Counsel, you might tone down your voice a little.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I actually have a hearing issue, and I sometimes speak loudly because I don't hear well.
All right.
I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you for noticing that. Appendix 10277 through 278, which is the remainder of our expert's report that was submitted on summary judgment. In discussing figure 2, which is the figure that counsel discussed with Judge Stoll and the specification Judge Rain at line 34 that he discussed with you, Mr. Rawls said the textual information provides the exact gap, 0.1 miles or 0.6 seconds, while the graphic representation of the elliptical track provides the visual representation of the same gap. He then continues at appendix page 10,279 to discuss the specifications figures 3 and 4 and figures 5A and 5B, which the panel saw we briefed in our discussion about why the new claim construction is not appropriate. And with respect to those particular embodiments of claims 1 and claim 6, he stated with respect to figures 3 and 4, it should be noted that all that's displayed in this case is the graphic representation of the gap between competitors. The textual information is not present or required to satisfy the claim limitation. And the court may recall from the specification figures 5A and 5B, which are intended to show a particular embodiment of dependent claim 1, or dependent claim 3, rather. Dependent claim 3, which depends from asserted claim 1, specifies that the display could be a virtual reality headset in one embodiment. Figures 5A and 5B are intended to show, according to the spec, what should be or could be displayed to one using a VR headset. Were they to look forward, to the side, or behind themselves? And that's what figures 5A and 5B show. So, Judge Reyna, in response to your direct question, our expert expressly disagreed with the construction now being offered.
So, just to make sure I understand, the point is that if there is an embodiment in which the user has to look behind them to see who's behind them and look in front of them to see who's in front of them for this comparative information, that that also takes mental effort, so that claim construction can't be correct.
Your Honor, that is exactly correct. And that is precisely why, focusing back, Judge Reyna, to your question, we start with the claim language that was issued by the office. The claim language that issued here, and it's regardless of whether it's independent claim 1 and 6, there's a minor difference in the language, and the difference is whether the display is driven or controlled because of the way the claims begin in their preambles. But the claim language for both is the same in relevant portion. They require that a performance comparison between the fitness equipment and at least one remote fitness equipment is visually displayed. That's the claim language that issued. A performance comparison is visually displayed. As we set out in our brief, the principal problem, well, there's two primary problems with appellant VR Optics appeal today. First is in seeking a new construction. They're not simply seeking to adopt the court's construction. They say that initially, but then if you look at...
They're arguing they're just clarifying the construction. They're not seeking a new construction.
Your Honor, respectfully, the court's decision in the Solve case answered the question of when is a construction a new construction. And the court held in Solve that when the construction seeks a material change, it's new. Adding a limitation here such that no mental comparison by the user is required is inappropriate for two reasons. One, it's plainly not contemplated by the claim language or by the specification or by the alternative embodiments, as we point out in our brief, including figures 3, 4, 5A, 5B, independent claims. But more importantly, it adds materially to the claim construction. And the proof of that is in the pudding, in that without getting a new construction from this court, they can't deny that the district court properly entered summary judgment. And so the very fact that they require a new construction from this court, adding such that no mental comparison by the user is required, is necessary to overturn the district court's judgment, is an indication under Solovey that that is a new construction. Respectfully, the decision in Lizard Tech is also, I think, helpful here. In that case, the court said where the party came forward having proposed the construction of the district court and lost on summary judgment, as VR Optics has here, they then argued that, well, the district court changed its interpretation of the claim in granting summary judgment. The court here said they could discern no change in the way the district court applied its construction, including its summary judgment. That same result is here in Judge Etkin's district court opinion. In that opinion, he expressly states, this is the construction I pointed out. I discussed figure 2 in my Markman construction. I talked about the elliptical dots. I'm applying the same construction. And as in the Lizard Tech case, there's no discerned change by the district court in how he adopted or interpreted his construction. So as a first point, VR Optics's, frankly, only argument to reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment is waived because it is a new construction. But as we've discussed, even if it is not waived, the new construction is improper because the figures that we've just talked about, 3, 4, 5A, 5B, dependent claim 3, and the VR headset, all contemplate at some level a user having to make some type of mental comparison. In rejecting and excluding VRO's expert, Mr. Lenz, and the court may find this in the court summary judgment, the district court rather, in the district court summary judgment order at Appendix 66, the court actually addressed this argument. In other words, that in order to properly construe Claim 1 and 6, there must be no mental activity by a user required. And the court expressly considered this, Appendix 66, in the second full paragraph, when he excluded Mr. Lenz and said, the display of a relative position of each competitor on a simulated track is a spatial representation of the competitor's relative performance. In short, it's a performance comparison, just as ordinal ranking is a numerical representation of the competitor's relative performance. And the next sentence is the key. The embodiment described in the Watterson patent no more requires a user to manually execute the comparison than any other conceivable display of relative performance. Judge Stoll, this directly answers your question where you said, if I have to turn around in a virtual headset and you behind me, the pack of riders as displayed in Figure 5B or the pack of riders in front of me as displayed in Figure 5A in the specification, doesn't that inherently require me to have some mental activity? It exactly does, which is why the construction is improper and why the construction is ignoring other embodiments and why Judge Etkin in the District Court of the Southern District of New York properly considered this very argument and rejected it in the sentence I've just read from Appendix page 66. The only authority that VR Optics presents to this court for its narrowing construction is what was line 34, Judge Reyna, just discussed with you in connection to figure 2. That argument, Your Honor, respectfully, is inappropriate as well. And the reason it's inappropriate is it relies on too narrow a reading of the specification. The very line that Mr. Gannon pointed out to the court in response to your question, Judge Reyna, actually says this. In discussing the display 200, so figure 2 is of the display of claim 1 and 6. In discussing display 200, in this embodiment, a display may include a graphic image of a track, 202, such as an elliptical running track that is a 0.025, quarter miles in circumference. Relatively simplistic circles or dots 204 and 206 may be provided to illustrate the respective competitors. This is the language they next hinge on. additional textual information, 208 and 210, may be provided to give more detailed data on the individual competitors and their comparative performance information. That line from the specification, Judge Reyna, that was discussed with you specifically, doesn't say that is the only embodiment. It is not a disclaimer. It is not a disavowal. It is not lexography. It is none of the things that can be used to definitively say that the claim language as issued by the Patent Office, which is much broader, that a performance comparison is visually displayed, in fact, was intended to exclude the other embodiments in figures 3, 4, 5A, and 5B.
Would you say that the following sentence is also helpful, where it talks about, by way of example, the information relating to the performance of the person may be displayed, and then they have a lot of different ways of doing that. Would that also support your point? It seems to me it would.
Your Honor, I apologize. I'm leaning in again. I don't hear very well. I heard Your Honor, I believe. Just apologies for the body language. Yes, Your Honor, it does. And as the court knows, one cannot selectively pick a single embodiment from the specification, import it into the limitation, and then require that as construction. That's black letter law. I don't need to cite the court certainly to that law, which is exactly what's happening today. Your Honors, with 2 minutes remaining, if I may, if the court deems it appropriate, may I address the duty to defend questions, Judge Lurie, that you were asking potentially? The court is correct in our view that the 2014 agreement broadly granted to Peloton a duty to defend and hold harmless. That duty may be found in Section 7.1 of the 2014 agreement. One of the things that I noticed as I prepared for oral argument is that the appellants and appellee Peloton used the same document but different versions of the summary judgment evidence because both parties submitted it. So I'm going to provide the court with two appendix citations so that the court may both track VR Optics' brief and Peloton's brief in response. So Section 7.1, we cited it at Appendix 3770. Appellant VR Optics cited it at Appendix 4369. That claim, Judge Stoll, as you noted, is broad. That indemnity is to indemnify, defend, and hold harmless. It has no other limitations. And importantly, in paragraph B, on the next page of the record appendix, it applies to any claim arising out of or relating to any violation or alleged violation, of any intellectual property rights regarding any of the bike intellectual property. Judge Stoll, I believe it was you that asked, doesn't the contract language rather expressly survive? It does, Your Honor. In paragraph 5.6 of the agreement, which the court may find at Appendix 4368 or at Appendix 3769. And the survival of rights in the agreement expressly states that the termination shall be without prejudice to, and this is subparagraph C, rights under any other provision of this agreement which expressly and necessarily calls for performance after contract termination.
What about expressly and necessarily? Expressly.
Yes, sir.
Is that clear here?
Yes, sir. I believe that it is. And the reason it is that in the representation and warranty that was given by Valencia Design Group to Peloton, and Your Honors may find this in Section 8.2A of the 2014 agreement at Appendix Page 4370 or Appendix Page 3771. The representation and warranty, Judge Lurie, that was provided by Valenci was that the bike intellectual property does not, and this is the important language, Your Honor, and will not infringe. And so that representation that the property provided by, the intellectual property and the design provided by Valencia Design Group was that it would not in the future. It did not and would not infringe. And as a result, that clause under the survival language, Your Honor, expressly and necessarily survives. I'd like to address briefly.
Wait. How does that then bring us back to the other language in the contract about the duty to defend? I mean, in other words, you're relying on the representation and warranty in Section 8.2A3 to tie back to the duty to defend. Do I understand that correctly? Or are you saying the duty to defend is itself a representation or warranty?
Both. Frankly, Your Honor, both. Both are correct.
How do you respond to opposing counsel's argument that, in fact, the duty to defend is not a representation or warranty because it's not listed expressly under Section 8.2, which is in all caps, representations and warranties.
Because the defense and indemnity clause, which is in paragraph 7.1 of the agreement, 7.1A, appendix 3770, states that Valencia agreed to indemnify and hold harmless Peloton against any claim. And then section B, arising out of or relating to any violation or alleged violation of the intellectual property rights. So there's a symmetry, Judge Stoll, between the representation and warranty language and the duty to defend, and that they both contemplate an alleged violation in the first section, and in the second, that the Peloton bike did not and will not in the future infringe on any intellectual property rights. Importantly, and then...
Do you think that the clause, the duty to defend clause itself, is a representation or warranty?
I do, Your Honor. I think it is, but I don't know that it's necessary to address that question or to find that affirmatively in order to affirm the district court's decision.
You're saying there can be an alternative logic, but what different logic would be, even though 8.3b says representations and warranties, it's not capitalized. I'm sorry, I'll speak louder. 8.3b, when it refers to the language representations and warranties, that's not capitalized as you might in a right, if you were trying to use a specialized meaning of that word. It's also, it says in this agreement, representation and warranties in this agreement, not in this section. What do you think of that, those points?
Your Honor, I'm referring to the text of the representation and warranty clause in the agreement, which is on appendix page 3771, or alternatively, appendix 4370. 4370, Your Honor. Appendix
okay.
4370.
I'm looking at A4371, and I'm just asking you if the language in 8.3b that refers to representations and warranties in lowercase includes the duty to defend.
I believe
it's in lowercase, so it's not, doesn't seem to be a defined term. And in addition, I note that it says representations and warranties contained in this agreement. It doesn't say contained in this section. So I'm asking you what you think of this point I'm making.
Your Honor, I believe you're correct, because it doesn't invoke the defined terms of the representation and warranty provision, and it broadly invokes the agreement. The duty to defend expressly survives under Section 8.3b.
Counsel, we've given you extra time because your opponent
yes, Judge.
Ran over, but I think we have your case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gannon, you have 2 minutes, and then Mr. Berman, 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let's go back to what Peloton's expert admitted about the claim construction, Appendix 9308. Starting on paragraph 22, he talks about the construction given by the court, logic configured to drive the display to visually display a difference in performance between the equipment based on a difference between the first and second parameters. Then, later, farther down on paragraph 22, he says, this means that both parts, determining a difference between the first and second parameters and driving the display to visually display a difference in performance, based on that difference, our structure function of the exercise device itself. Okay, so now moving on to the next page of his report. This is Appendix 9309. At the top, you can see he's discussing raw performance parameters. He's talking about one traveler going at 5 miles per hour and another traveler going at 7.5 miles per hour. And what he says in the middle of page 9309 is that presenting the raw output data, like how fast you're going, presenting the raw output data in the absence of any display based on the difference between the first and second performance parameters does not satisfy that claim element. How could the court possibly have ruled against us on summary judgment when their expert said displaying raw performance parameters only doesn't meet the claim? That's one admission by their expert. What else does he say? He says, again, on page 9309, the claim itself requires the function of calculating the difference. He says...
Could one possibility be that the district court didn't think this was correct as a matter of claim construction?
The court made no indication at all that it was changing its construction or that its construction was incorrect.
I wasn't suggesting that it thought its construction was incorrect. I was suggesting that maybe it thought that its construction didn't support this idea that is in the expert report on page 9309.
Well, again, Your Honor, when you have our expert saying one thing about the construction and their expert saying if you're offloading the comparison to the user, that doesn't meet the claim, it seems to me there's an issue of fact. And one last point.
Isn't claim construction a question of law?
Claim construction is a question of law, Your Honor, yes. One last point I'd like to make that I didn't get out, again, on this same page, 9309. The court said, if the difference is not calculated, determined by the exercise device itself, and is used as a basis of a comparative display, then the claim element is not satisfied. So their experts gave three different reasons why the court's stated construction isn't satisfied by Watterson.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Berman has a minute if he wishes to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very quickly. So it's a black letter rule of law that contracts have to be interpreted as a whole. When a contract contains representations and warranties, a section called representations and warranties, then interpreting that contract as a whole, later references to representations and warranties, I think it's only fair to understand that to refer to the section of the contract that specifically includes the representations and warranties. A duty to defend is not, I've seen lots of contracts in my career, it's an obligation, but it's not a representation or a warranty. It's not a representation of fact. It's not a warranty that something exists. It's just legally a different concept.
But the duty to defend is encompassed within the survival provision.
Well, it is, and I was parrying those questions at the beginning, but Mr. Shortkin addressed it, and so let me go directly to where Your Honor started, which is if we're going to interpret this contract strictly, what's good for the goose is sauce for the gander, the word is expressly. There is not an express provision that the duty to defend survives the contract. So if Mr. Shortkin wants a very, very strict interpretation of this contract, then he needs to be able to point to a place in this contract where it expressly survives. There isn't one. I believe the court needs to interpret this contract as a whole, which includes this issue that the district court avoided. The district court didn't decide on an interpretation of the phrase bike intellectual property. The only way that phrase can be understood is in the context of the entire contract, which was that Valenci Design Group was providing specific services and that it was warranting its own design services. It is fundamentally unfair and inaccurate to make a small design firm responsible for the entire multi-billion-dollar Peloton system. There's no consideration for it. There is no expectation of the parties as reflected in Peloton's own conduct. And it simply is an incorrect interpretation and application of this contract and the duty to defend.
Thank you, counsel. I don't think there's anything to respond to, so the case is submitted.